no fly list.
As far as the no fly list,
If you're on that list.
The most problematic thing is that
anyone can be under the investigation of the FBI. FBI.
And I know that something really good is going to come out of all of this.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the No Fly List, where we talk to comedians and musicians and artists, also other cool people of color. I'm Sabine Sadiq.
And I'm Ethier Yacoub.
And today we had the best time. We were talking to one of my good friends from Chicago, actually, Zeeshan Bhagwati. And he is a musician, singer, songwriter, who's very soulful. And you can hear it in the entire podcast.
Oh, he was so soulful and also very funny and fun, which I think sometimes it's hard to get that combo of really deep and personal, but also just lighthearted and lovely. And he's like a Desi uncle that we love.
Yeah. And also a cat dad.
Yes. The cat actually does make a cameo towards the end of this episode. And you could see the full video on Patreon, but I really love talking to Zeeshan. This was my first time talking to him. And I really related to him on the Muslim stuff of like growing up Muslim and just trying to kind of hold on to more of the cultural stuff, but not necessarily like the following the rules stuff. So I related hardcore to that.
And I became real Muslim auntie and I was like, you guys need to practice.
You need to pray. No,
you need to pray
for your souls. I go to hell.
I was like, I'll just pray for you. It's okay.
I loved his origin story too. Like I'd never heard of echolalia he was talking about, which I just looked up during this, but basically it's like a psychiatric this thing where you repeat words. And he was saying how that has played a role in him becoming a musician, which I thought was really cool and interesting, and how his parents were also supportive of that, of him going, you know, becoming a musician. And that's why I want his dad to adopt me. That's what I learned from this episode.
Honestly. Yeah. I think it's so cool. I had never heard of echolalia either. And I'm like, okay, so you hear something and then you just make that sound. It's like,
It's like this impulse to do it. Yeah.
Right. And his parents were like, okay, we see this happening. Let's get him some music classes.
That is so dope. Yeah. And he also speaks multiple languages and incorporates that into his music, which is so cool. And he kind of describes his music into like a neo soul type of genre, even though we don't want to box him into one type of thing. I think you guys just have to listen to his music to really understand.
Yes. What it's like. Like as a Desi person, I grew up knowing what like ghazals are and qawwalis, and it's very folk. It's very interesting, very romantic stuff. And when you listen to his ghazals, I swear it is like it will put you in a trance. That's what happened to me. I was just like, I'm in this different world, and that's how his music makes me feel. It just makes me feel like I'm somewhere else.
Oh well, I felt that even just. Talking to him. So I can only imagine the depth of his music and how that's going to elicit like that warm, fuzzy kind of also connection to home feeling, but his new take on it, which is, I love that kind of mixing the old school traditional with new age stuff and coming up with something completely different and unique, but kind of brings those two worlds together. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. But before we get to his episode, let's start with our first segment, the No Fly List, where we put the people who deserve to not fly instead of innocent brown folks like ourselves. It's kind of our shit list too. So Sabine, who do we have this week?
This week, we have Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. Okay.
Oh,
we're
boy.
Them both on there.
Whoa. What did they do?
Woe is right. They have just been taking a lot of new space with their messy trial. They've been basically Johnny Depp has been saying that Amber Heard has defamed him, and based on things that she said about him, his career has been ruined. And Amber, I'm not sure what she's saying, but she's probably talking about how he was abusive, but clearly, I mean, and maybe that did happen, but they were just in a very toxic marriage. And I think it's just really messy right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been seeing a bunch of, you know, news articles on them. And I honestly haven't been paying as much attention because celebrity news just gets way too much press and overwhelming. And it's like, all right, Johnny Depp, like simmer down, dude.
Exactly. It's like, you've got, you've done a lot of work. All right. I don't think she really ruined.
She's not going to ruin your career. But I mean, yeah. I think if they're both toxic to each other and have both been abusive, then yeah, they do deserve to only hitchhike from now on, and they shouldn't get their private jet. You don't get to fly. All right. That's exactly your punishment. And that will hold in court.
Yeah. You stay in that mansion. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. You stay on mansion arrest.
But yeah, that's, I agree that they're taking up way too much news time. It's like, I don't want to see anything about you two. I don't care.
Seriously. Meanwhile, like the planet is burning and people are like, no, let's distract ourselves with more of this nonsense. But I agree with that. I agree that both are on the no fly list. But on a lighter note, I think you guys are going to really love Zeeshan. Please, you know, check out his music. Sabine and I are going to go, well, by the time this comes out, I don't know if this will already have passed, but we're going to go see him at Rockwood Music Hall on May 16th. Lord,
yes,
don't fact.
Rockwood Music Hall, Rockwood 2.
Awesome. Said. So guys, enjoy Zeeshan. Okay. Hi, Zeeshan. So nice to meet you.
Hi, how's it going? Nice to meet you guys too.
You look very cool right now. I don't know. You just give a very cool vibe. It's like,
oh, my goodness. Oh.
You look like you just like sealed a business deal or something and you're like closing in and you got your Georgetown mug.
Exactly. Wow. It's like, I just closed out $1 billion. All right. What do you guys want?
if only that were the case.
How much are musicians getting paid these days, man? For the record, we see nothing for the people at home listening. We just see a blurred background, but I can already tell it's just made out of gold.
Yeah.
And diamonds.
Yeah, my kingdom. Yeah.
I was actually out performing in New York. Yeah, you were in New York for a few years performing. How long were you in New York?
Oh my goodness. Well, I've been in and out of New York in so many different phases of my life, but you know, I first most recently from 2018 up until 2021. I'm talking from Chicago right now and in the Gold Palace as
and the, where he's wheeling and dealing.
We're wheeling and dealing. she's you know, don't flatter me. Athir's trying to, you know, don't try to make me blush because I can't, you know, like
yeah, we won't be able to see it.
That's a nice we won't be able to.
You love it.
But I'm in Chicago now but I still, you know, have a place in New York. I have in Harlem. So I'm in New York all the time. So, you know,
that's great.
I get it in. You know?
That's cool. Chicago's a really cool place. I don't really know much about the music scene. I only know a little bit about the comedy scene, just from visiting, going with Sabine, but, is that where you started out in Chicago?
Yeah, it is actually. It's, cause I grew up here and, you know, this city really was a great sort of incubation point. This is where I started my career. I started playing clubs here. I started playing, you know, anything I could get, you know, how it is. It's show business. So.
I mean, I'm jealous of you guys for like being in Chicago and being in like a city with other like diverse, like brown people. Like I grew up in Alabama. I didn't know you could have dreams until I left. I was like, oh, people do other things.
Jim Crow got you down, huh?
Not just me. I'm probably the least affected by it, but yeah.
Oh my goodness. Zeeshan, what were some
more like my parents have me down, not Jim Crow as much as
all your parents. Well, my parents
snuck away to New York and then boom.
Yeah.
And then do they miss you now?
They do. They still think I'm going to move back 15 years later after living in New York. They're like, when are you going to finish this little hobby of yours?
Yeah. Who wouldn't want to be in Tuscaloosa or
Birmingham, close.
Birmingham.
I didn't even know that was a city, Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, okay. Look at you. Are you a football fan?
I know, not at all.
Me neither.
my cousin, this is a true story. My cousin, he's the only person on my dad's side of the family. My dad was one of 12, one of a litter of 12. And he's the only one that made it to America. And so for all these years, he was all alone in terms of his own direct, you know, immediate family. Finally, in 2015, one of his nephews made it here. He got he started a master's degree at Auburn University.
Oh, wow.
And so this kid came from the rural environs of South India to
the rural environment
of Alabama. And my dad and I went and picked him up from the airport and gave him a very American welcome. So that was the first time in that I went to Alabama. It was interesting to say the least.
That is crazy. And you're like, thank God we didn't come here.
Yeah. Isn't Alabama beautiful though? Like, isn't it so green in nature? No.
There's some trees. There's some greenery. Okay. There's some agriculture. Yeah, not what you saw.
Like there's a park.
Athir would know more. And I don't mean to disparage where anybody.
So
comes.
You I'm can sure, disparage.
I've heard that Mobile is a cool place. I really
it
heard
is.
That. And I.
It is. It's by the beach too. It's really cute little town.
It seems like it has a lot of character.
By character, he means racism.
A little bit of that too. That's
that old Southern charm.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Dixiecrats and the daughters of the Confederacy and
exactly,
the Lost Cause people. All that's all baked in. You know,
it's so true.
Well, Zeeshan, what were some of in Chicago? You started it out. What got you into music? I guess, like, what was your kind of origin story?
Well, I just always loved sounds. I was always fascinated. I had this thing when I was a kid called echolalia, where I would, any sounds that I heard that I liked, I would just repeat them. You know, whether other people wanted to hear them or not. You know, I would just. repeat them.
Echolalia?
Yeah, that's a thing where it's like a tick, you know, so it's like, it's an actual, it's a thing. It was like a condition I sort of had. And
I thought you were just saying ukulele weird.
Yeah.
Ukulele. Well,
echolalia. I see it now.
Echolalia. Yeah. And so it was a thing. And so from my earliest days, according to my parents, I had that. And, it just so happened that my folks, my family, they really loved music a lot. My mom and dad were always listening to music. Everywhere we went, there'd be music playing. And I just was so attracted to it. And why wouldn't I be? It's a human thing to be attracted to music and to love it. And in my case, it always grabbed my attention. And I just grew up around it, folks listening to the radio or playing, cassette tapes or things like that, and the road trips, all that stuff. And so I was gravitated towards it. You know, my parents got, a piano in the house, and they made us join band, orchestra. They lived very sort of vicariously through me and my sisters. They said, we didn't get this stuff back where we came from. And so, you guys are going to do it whether you like it or not. So
what? That's like so it. Cool.
I happen to like it. I happen to like it. And it was always around me, And so anyways, so as far as, making a career in it, when I was in high school, I went to a high school with a really, really, really good music program and one of the best in the country. And I had a lot of guidance. My teachers, encouraged me to do it in college. They gave me a lot of opportunities, like a lot of solo opportunities to cut my teeth. I was also in gospel choir,
Okay.
This is a true story.
No wonder you like the South. No.
Yeah.
Was it just you and like a mega church or?
Singing
the gospel.
Yeah. It turned into that eventually. I don't have my rings on and my, my polyester suit and I'm not trying to, exercise a vacuum cleaner or whatever it is they do in the Pentecostal world. You'd know more about that. I was in a gospel choir and I was a soloist and. I grew up around that music. I loved it. I ended up going to college for it. I ended up studying it in college didn't know then whether I'd want to make a career out of it. But while I was studying music at Northwestern here in Evanston in Chicago, I would moonlight on the weekends. I would perform for like the Desi community, you know, this sort of like, you know, almost So Far Sounds type, you know, the original So Far Sounds vibe. Like, So Far Sounds is bullshit. This, our people had like the real deal, the Shami Ghazals, as we call them. Yeah. And Sabi would know all about that.
I was going to ask you, because like, so Athira, Zeeshan's music, like I feel like it's just transformed. Like, did you start off doing more Qawwalis, which is like, basically, Desi folk music would be the best way to describe it, with like some instruments, right?
The Qawwalis is a little technical here, but Qawwalis not so much, because Qawwalis is purely, you know, devotional. It's interpretive, but it's devotional, and usually there's an ensemble of, you know, 10 dudes wearing the same outfit, you know, performing that stuff. That I didn't do Qawwali because Ghazal was my thing. Ghazal was more because it was secular. It was more romance and you know, the finer things in life are discussed, not just God.
Can I be the backup? If you need a vocalist, backup. Just say bow, chicky bow, ow, I'll do that.
Yeah. You should join this team. Absolutely.
Well. It's interesting that I got to see how the most conservative Quran thumping people would get down to this stuff. You know, and with this stuff, much as they literally talk,
literally bow down to the ground and say stuff.
Yeah, like they're still praying.
They're still praying, but they are like, oh, this is like, and it's a song that's just all about sex. It's all about, you know, or unrequited love.
Maybe it's like more innuendo in our music, I feel like Arabic music, right? It's not explicit. I want to fuck you in the ass.
Of course.
I want to buy a flower and talk to your dad, but we all know what it means. It's an undertone.
Exactly what it is.
Your chastity belt.
Exactly. I want to take off your chastity belt, but only after we're married. Write this down, Zeeshan. What are you doing? You're welcome. Right, this is your next hit. No.
Athira needs to be the co-writer on the next one. But I think you're hitting on something, Athira. I think that I actually like that stuff because it was the metaphorical aspect of it is so much more interesting and more suspenseful and beautiful. And some of the metaphors from those songs that I used to sing. And once again, these are things my folks listened to growing up. So it was just always just kind of in my sort of psyche. And I enjoyed that. And that, even though I don't necessarily sing that anymore, I used to sing that back then just to get gigs, just to, you know, $100 and a plate of biryani, you know, a Pakistani fashion show.
We get it. Oh, yeah.
I have some very, very interesting, tacky things that I did. It was great because I got experience, you know, getting on stage.
Mm-hmm. Like, we've done like so many like random open mics in the most weird venues or like,
like Muslim shows where like, they're just so, I don't know. Did you grow up Muslim? I want to assume.
I did. My parents, my family's Muslim. I went to Sunday school and definitely grew up in and around that community. My parents were not religious, but I'd say observant, you know. I grew up to be sort of, I don't know. It's. I have a lot of baggage with that, but I did technically grow up Muslim. I'm not practicing now, but you know, it's in and around you. You know.
No, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I totally get it. Because I grew up, being really in a conservative place within a conservative place in the South. So it's like a turducken of religion. It's just different. So I came to New York, the most sacrilegious place, and then I'm like, okay, I think I found my people. I mean, I'm not sacrilegious, but or maybe to Muslims, I definitely
you can
am.
Be.
But
yeah, you can be. You can be.
You know, in 2022, I can be sacrilegious if I want to.
Hell yeah, you can.
I think what's hard is that it's hard to be. You know, I've this is where comedy is interesting because I've found like the Jewish community. I love that Larry David or Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah. They can be Jewish culturally.
Exactly. This is like my,
they can, yes. You know, they can go to, yes. They can go to a bar mitzvah and talk with their Uncle Moshe about whatever, go to a Seder, go to a Shul.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a cultural piece to them. And then, but then they're their own thing and it doesn't, you know, and so that's a difficult, very difficult space to traverse. And for anybody in show business, I know that that's, everybody wants to talk about, everybody wants to engage mm-hmm. on that. And it's like, I wish there was a paradigm where that existed. And
I think we are creating it. I think it's happening. Yeah. I think like
even
we're seeing it in comedy, right? There's different, like Sabine, we know a lot of comedians who are Muslim or brought up Muslim, but not everyone's necessarily like practicing, but culturally we still have Eid, like we're going to have like a little Eid party or whatever. And like, we can do those things. And it's just our own people are the ones that usually judge us like, oh, well, you're not doing this, this, and this, or you don't wear hijab or, you know, then you're not really Muslim. It's like, exactly. Who are you to judge?
It's really the older generations too, because I feel like a lot of us, like, look, we've been going to so many iftars and like, yeah, some of us are practicing and some of us are just like, hey, this is like just a part of what I'm used
to. Some of us are going to hell. So
and some of us are going to hell and maybe want to be here.
Maybe, but as long as you both are there, I'm down with it. But you know, I think what is interesting is I have to respectfully I have to like sort of give a little bit of counterpoint here. Like I actually, the more I think about it, I don't know if it really is the old generations, because I'll give you an example. My sister, you know, my older sister. Went through a phase in her life where she wore a hijab. And my grandparents were very much against it. My grandparents. They said, this is not Indian. This is not Hindustani. This is not this is not our culture. This is not our culture. This is Arab culture. Like, that, let the Arabs, they have, you know, that's part of their culture. That's their thing. What, you know, I remember my grandmother used to say, well, why don't you just wear a dupatta? Why don't, like, isn't that, what's wrong with our, you know, which is like a shmata. You know what I mean? Like, well, why can't, and so, these are people, even like our parents' generation, if you think about it, at least from South Asia, their version of Islam, like my dad said, the first time he saw a hijab really was when he came to America, not in India. Mm-hmm. These are people that were running around barefoot, you know, flying kites when they were kids, you know? And so I think something happened here in America where things became racialized and oil money came in from certain places. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
Well, I also think it's even within the era, it did probably start off a cultural thing, because even Christians, Jewish people all covered their hair. And there was a time where in the Middle East or in like in that area, the people, everybody did it. So I think it's in the Torah, it's in the Quran, it's in the Bible about covering your hair. And so, well, I don't know. Okay, guys, don't put a fatwa out or whatever on me, but there's interpretations
of the
Quran.
I already
have a couple out. Yeah. Guys, give me something original.
Like a subpoena, you know?
I say there's a cultural aspect and some people interpret from the Quran the religious aspect of the hijab, but that's still disputed. So I feel like, or there's different interpretations of it. So I was going to say though, the more religious Arabs are like more like the Saudi, like they're sort of the ones that set the scene for the rest of the Muslim world, but they're way more conservative and observant and some quote unquote, because they'll also do the most heinous war crimes, but then be like, but we're religious. It's like, oh yeah, please sign a peace treaty with Israel and fucking bomb Yemen, but you're the most holy. Sure.
Yeah, but they're getting their 5 prayers in a day.
Exactly. So. That's the most important thing.
I think that makes sense.
I didn't eat the sausage pizza. I didn't, you know, I wonder if I do want to ask you something, because I'm curious. I felt that people, immigrant groups that come to America, because America is by definition a very religious country, and you're from the South, you're from the Bible Belt, the Pentecostal, you know, South, and
Baptists
and I wonder, do you think it's more America that makes people religious? For example, like you go to mm-hmm. Europe. Mm-hmm. You don't see people, you know, praying with like snakes on their shoulder, and you know, you don't. People are actually the where you think of like, you know, the seat of Christianity, like the Vatican and all that. Like, but the rest of Europe, are they you know, very, you know, do they you know, mix religion and politics like Americans do? No, I wonder. I just wonder.
That's from a good point. Mm-hmm. I think there's two parts of that. I never thought about it. I always thought about it in the sense of immigrant or Muslims living outside of their countries, just trying to double down on the culture and the religion because they're immigrants. I didn't think about where they immigrated to, whether it's Europe or the US. I think Muslim wise, I think like, even though like Europe is way more lax, I still feel like the Muslims that go there, at least some that I've spoken to, can be just as religious as the ones in US, but at least they're not surrounded by a culture of religion. I wonder though, if that makes things better or worse in terms of like religiosity, not better or worse, but maybe degree of religion. What do you think, Sabine?
Well, when I think about it, I was just thinking about the UK, and every time I visit there, I think like, okay, do I feel like there is there's a lot of South Asians there. Like
that place is fire and brimstone.
Full of Pakistanis, Desis, everybody. And I think that they're very conservative out there. And yeah. I think it is kind of because maybe, you know, the regular British people are maybe not that vocal about or expressive about their religions. I'm not sure, but like, I think it might make it a little bit easier for Muslims to practice their own and feel like there's nothing, I don't know, I'm not sure.
It's interesting, right? It's interesting. And only people who have been in show business have traveled Europe and, you know, performed there. And we get an interesting sort of snapshot into all that, right?
Yeah, but I have met the most conservative Muslims in the UK. So I'm just kind of like, okay, I guess, you know, I think it's a big part of it is just like trying to hold on to your identity when you're just not in your home country.
100%. I think
it's funny because the identity that some people hold on to is not something that ever existed.
It's a projected identity, like, or it's like they're overcompensating because in Palestine, people are not that religious. Like in Ramallah, people drink and party and wear, like, it's not as like it. When I would go back to Palestine, I actually loved, because I lived there part-time, I would feel more free than in Alabama, where my parents were so strict there. But I felt they were more lax in Palestine because we're already in the culture. They don't feel like we have to, like, you know, hold on so strongly to it because it just exists.
It's like a fear-based identity in Alabama or in the States. You know, it's very fear-based. It's like, oh, it is. We're going to become...
Our kids are going to be, Baptists, you know, on drugs and you know, become prostitutes. That's their, like, fear.
And that's where, you know, I remember my parents used to tell me that, like, we didn't come here to preserve everything. That's just not, like, there are things that we had to leave behind there, and the best thing you can do is be part of the fabric of, like, they really believed in the American experiment. Like, my mom, no joke, she is an election official in, you know, suburban Illinois.
Wow.
And, you know, their level of civic, their sense of civics and sense of, like, this is a culture.
They really want to assimilate and integrate. Whereas
they really wanted to. They wanted to, and maintain, really, but at the same time, maintain some of the cool things. And I like to think that, well, you know, that some of the cool things that I've tried, and that's what I've tried to do with kind of my music, is like the things, like you said, we were talking earlier about the metaphor. I love the use of metaphor in the Urdu and Punjabi, like, repertoire. And so the music that I write now, I try to use a lot of metaphor. I try to use the poetry. I try to evoke feelings and sentiments instead of just being, I mean, I've done some on the nose shit too.
Even with comedy, like when we write jokes, it's like, it's when it's not so like explicit, and sometimes when there's like innuendo or you have to let people kind of fill in the blank or take it another level, or, you know, when it's multi-layered, I think that adds a lot of richness and complexity to it that is, you know, more enjoyable and more niche and unique than being very, literal.
Well, yeah. Slapstick.
Exactly.
And Zeeshan, do you, does this mean that you speak, how many different languages are you like singing in? Cause are you doing Punjabi and Hindi?
So, you know, in addition to English, you know, as far as what I could speak, English I can speak, obviously.
You speak English really good. No, see, yeah, yeah, right, yeah, say that. You're good, you English. It's accent. Like, you're not even you saying it. Right. Yeah, you don't have an accent. It's like, yeah, I'm from Chicago.
My dad told me a funny story when he first came to America. He said somebody told him, like, you know, man, you speak English really, really well. And my dad said, yeah, I learned it from the cradle. The guy said, what's that? You know.
Oh my God.
You know,
the so, class.
In addition, yeah, obviously, you know, I speak Urdu. I read Urdu. I learned it from my grandparents. They bless their hearts. They taught me so much about that culture, and I was very blessed to have grown up around them. So I learned to speak and read Urdu. And then Punjabi, I learned more of. I feel awkward saying this in the presence of a real Punjabi like Sabine, but I kind of am a poser. I faked my way through it. I've learned a lot of it over the years just because of being in sort of show business, and you know, there's so much beautiful repertoire in Punjabi, and there's so much, a lot of, you know, the, I'll just say it's a very relevant language to know and to sing. And I, as far as singing it, I've sung it a lot, and speaking it, I try to sort of stumble my way through. I also speak Italian.
I do speak Italian. I knew you were in the mafia just from the way. Now it's all you've been closing deals, you've been making people sleep with the fishes. I don't know, Italian Indian mafia.
Look what they did to my son. We're you guys are a friend of ours. It's like he's a friend of ours. No,
as a friend, I just relegated the entire Italian beautiful language to mafia speak. I don't know why.
Well, I like it. I found it interesting. I studied opera when I was in college, so I had to learn how to sing in Italian. So I took it a step further and actually like did a study abroad there and got really good at that language. And the that Italian music has, like, this new album I'm writing is, you know, it's kind of made its way, some of that influence has made its way in, and using an orchestra and the song formats, like an aria, like doing what's called a recitative in the beginning, where it's like you kind of singspiel, where you sort of talk slash sing a little bit, and then there's the actual tune, you know, which is when the orchestra comes in. That's very arioso, that's very, you know, Italianate. And so that's a thing. Those are the main languages that I sing in. But you know, being in showbiz, you know, growing up and through going through the world of classical music, I've had to learn singing German, I had to learn singing French, I had to learn singing Russian, which might count against me now, but
depends. Yeah, that's who you talk to. But yeah, I learned. That's so cool. And you haven't learned Arabic?
I wish, you know, the Arabic is one of those strange things. It's like, you know, I don't know how to explain to people, like, because of going to Sunday school, it's like, I can read that thing, but I don't know what the hell it is.
That's how I feel about Urdu or Farsi. I'm like, I can read it because it's Arabic letters, but I have no clue what it says.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's such a Desi experience of like,
I hear that from my friends a lot.
And we haven't memorized. I have so much Arabic script memorized. I don't know what any of it means.
What does that say? But what does that say about it? People that you're taught to read something and not understand. They don't want you to. But
they don't want to know or think critically about it. Sometimes they're just like,
Onus is put on memorizing it, right? So Arabic. I love that music. I love Umm Kulthum. I love I love Muhammad Abdul Wahab. Like those cats. Yeah. Badass, you know, and so.
Abdul Halim, I think all of these like classic. Oh, that's awesome.
Your music is just like I can never, like, what genre, or do you not like saying I'm this genre? Like, what kind of stuff do you like currently? What are you like working on? Is it more like, I don't know, jazz?
It's musically fluid.
Jazz?
Yeah, I don't know.
Musically fluid.
It's tough. I grapple with that. It's tough because I don't like putting any labels, but you know, being in, you know, in the world of commercial art, obviously it has to sell and whatever, and so the powers that be sort of put me in the genre of soul, like neo soul, R&B, and I think that's fitting in some ways, but you know, this new the stuff I put out so far is definitely, a lot of it hits that sort of soul, neo soul zone, and this new stuff I'm writing is going to be a mixture of that, as well as you know, big band sort of, you know, Broadway vibe, like the stuff, like, for example, during the pandemic, I listened to a lot of Sinatra. And so I was like, fuck, I want to do a Sinatra style record. So this new stuff I'm writing is going to have like an actual orchestra behind me. And so, I guess it'll be what it is. People say all kinds of things about, you know, what is it? It's not, to me, it's just Zeeshan B. I idolize people who, like Frank Sinatra sang so many different styles of music, but it was just Frank Sinatra. And Bill Withers sang all kinds of stuff. Like his music was, what was it, R&B? Was it pop? Was it soul? Was it neo soul? Was it jet? Like, I don't know, but it was Bill Withers. And so I like that I gravitate toward that stuff that's just kind of, it's its own thing.
Yeah. And what I really love is like when I've seen Zeeshan like playing live, Athira, you're going to love it. I can't wait.
I'm so excited to see you in New York.
Yes. Rockwood Music Hall. We'll totally plug that later also. But Zeeshan like will do this cool thing where like when I saw you perform one time, it was like you were doing like a ghazal and it was so beautiful, or like a ghazal type thing. And then you went straight into like your soul music and you're like going from like Hindi to English. And it's just like, I just love how you transition into it. And it's just, I don't know, it's just really cool.
Thank you. Thank you, Sabina. I'm glad that it means a lot to me that these things that I do, these gestures I make and these choices I make, that they resonate with people. And, you know, I've always tried to do things that are authentic to me. And of course, having grown up with being in that diaspora and learning those languages and, you know, I try to create music that hits on that. And I love doing it. I just played. And now, you know, it's just fun to get back into playing. I play the saloons, play the clubs. The Rockwood Hall thing is coming up May 16th in New York. I'm also doing a residency at the Promontory in Chicago. Just did opening night on Thursday, and it was so much fun. And I did exactly, you know, what Sabine was talking about, where I got to combine all those things that I love.
Oh, that's incredible.
That is really cool. I love that. I think that's so refreshing and unique, and something that that ties in like the cultural piece without necessarily pulling in the religious piece or being like, you know, we grew up, a lot of people like music is haram or this and that and singing. So it's like nice that you could take aspects of the culture and make it something like new and, you know, really that speaks to you. And
I mean, at that point, everything's haram. Like, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
I did a show and this older religious lady comes up to me. She's wearing hijab and she's just like, oh, you know, you should quit because comedy is haram. And I'm like, lady, like, this is women can speak. It's okay. I'm not stripping. Like,
like, how dare you speak into a microphone?
But even if you even did, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you did, are you going to police somebody's body? I mean,
exactly.
I do consider myself more on the sort of, you know, agnostic/atheist, you know, tip. And I just think there's no room for religion in the 21st century. This is the time of science and technology, and places, people that, you know, hang on to those things are, you know, are being left behind. There's so many problems in the world.
I practice.
That's fine. That's
no, but here's the thing. Okay, if I can sort of interject in between both of you. So I have a joke, but I say I'm spiritual, which is like declaring your major is undecided, but it's true. It's like, I do consider myself more spiritual. And I think before I was stuck between like, am I Muslim? Am I agnostic? Because I still believe in something. But I think like, that sort of covers even, I think the difference between, or it's not my, I think it was Osho that's interpreted it this way. It was like the difference between religion and spirituality is religion is interested in bringing people closer to each other, where spirituality is bringing you closer to yourself and using and finding, and even Sufism, it's like finding the divine in you and all this stuff. So I think like when I hear Sabine talk about her religion or the way your mom practices, it seems like it's more from the spiritual place rather than this, like, this is the rules and how you do it, and sort of like more, and it's more of like a personal thing, which I appreciate than people trying to put stuff on others. But I don't
know. I do understand it. Like, I also do agree with Zeeshan, because I think that like I had to just redefine religion for myself. I had to like unlearn a lot, like everything Sunday school, everything that I didn't.
We went to the same Sunday school.
We did.
Did you?
In Chicago.
I also, I went to an Islamic school in Alabama for an entire year, a year round school. So that fucked me up in the head.
That's too much.
It does damage. And people that, and there are a lot of people out there that can't, you know, undo that. And then there's those of us who are trying to like figure that out for the rest of our lives. Like, oh, where does this fit in? Does it fit in? Does it work? You know?
Absolutely. And that's the thing I mean, I guess just for me, it's just been like, okay, this is how Sabine does Islam and like, you know, reconnecting with it in the way that feels good to me. And then, you know, just having a healthy relationship with it. So I don't fully, you know, I think it is pretty great, but, maybe not in the sense where you're just doing the dogmatic stuff of it, but you're not really thinking through it, or you're not like connecting with people, or you're not loving people, because I see the religion as like, it's kind of about love. Like,
absolutely. You know. And it can be, and it should be, but you know, it, unfortunately when it becomes political and when it becomes a political movement, and when you start making, you know, societal rules and laws around that stuff, you know, based on texts that can't be changed. It's, you can't change the Quran or the Bible or whatever. Yeah. So it's like, you can't change it. So it's like, you can't adapt it to like modernity. For me, being Desi has always been more central to me than being Muslim. You know, I feel the same way about
being Palestinian. Being and Arab, not even, and sometimes not even Arab, because Palestinians have sort of even this like different identity, because not all Arabs care about Palestine, Saudi Arabia. And so I don't really necessarily identify with them as much as I identify as being Palestinian. But when I do meet other people who are Muslim, I like that we have this shared cultural experience. Even if neither of us maybe practice and do all that stuff, it's so nice. I still feel more bonded, but I get what you're saying.
Absolutely. And this is where I've always, you know, it's like those, when you rant to people and nothing doesn't go anywhere, but I've always kvetched and said like, you know, Sunday school, for example, if
kvetched, I love that you use like Yiddish to describe a Muslim feeling. That's great.
You're in comedy, you're in showbiz.
It's a great, yeah.
These are, this it's, is.
Yiddish this, is great. I'm schwitzing right now.
If you're in show business in America, you're going to learn a lot about Jewish culture, or, you know, Yiddish. You're going to learn.
Oh, are there a lot of Jewish people in comedy? Is that
are there? There are.
You had me like.
I know. He was like, are you okay?
Yeah. Like, sorry. I mean, music, there definitely are. And, you know, and the best and some of the best and the best. And I am envious of them, because it's like you took aspects of your culture and like you made it really cool and like, and it was hip. And like, I mean, that's what I like.
And you're doing that too now. Yeah. You're doing
I'm trying to, you know, one cardigan at a time, you know?
Yeah, exactly. $1 billion deal at a time.
I didn't really think about $1 billion. My goodness. Oh, this is so motivating.
Yeah. We're manifesting.
Come on. Bishan is just, you know, you have been like crushing it forever. So it's coming your way. He's okay. So I was going to jump to the next section where we talk about, some of our fans, they give us dating questions, and then you and us, we just kind of answer them.
Yeah. So the segment is called 50 Shades of Brown.
Okay. So here's a question. I mean, as a public figure, did you, I guess, pre-meeting your wife, did you face any problems while dating anyone? Or like, was it hard dating as like a musician, and was there any kind of judgment or anything like that?
Yes. You know, it was hard to get. How do I answer that? Because I think it was hard for anybody to like. And maybe it's just my own experience; it's anecdotal. But like, it was hard to get a partner who saw me as like a stable match. You know, as being, you know, I mean, there were girls who, you know, I dated who. You know, we had a great thing going on, but they just said like, either my parents won't accept you because you're so many, you're a musician and that sort of thing. And, you know, even though I checked so many boxes in other ways, and that's hard because, you know, people want, And now those same women are in very miserable marriages, or they're divorced or whatever. And because they ended up with some Joe Schmo, like, you know, hedge fund guy or whatever, and like, who has no idea how to please them. And like,
you mean our Joe Schmo is Mo Schmo.
There we go. We
gotta get your average Mo Schmo. All right.
That was a good bit.
You're like a supportive dad when you say, yeah. Good one. You're going to make a great Desi dad. I don't know if you have kids, but.
I don't, but I'd look the part. I wear cardigans and, you know, I am such an uncle when I'm around. I do definitely have some dad vibes, as I get older.
Cool dad vibes. Yeah.
Cool dad vibes. Yeah. No pocket protectors, just cardigans.
Thank you. Yes.
Then how did you meet your wife then? You know, since like.
Oh, yes. So the back to the dating thing. Yeah. So I was meandering. Yeah. So it was hard, but that's just, you know, I think it's. Everybody has their own individual experience. I also, you know, was learning, you know, the etiquette of like what it is to be, you know, I was in a serious relationship for some years before that. And, you know, with another artist, and that was hard, you know, and that presented its own challenges and whatnot. So I was learning. And what was your question about the.
Just the struggles of dating as a musician.
Oh, the struggles of dating as a musician. Yeah. And then, you know, because and I get it, because who wants to date someone that's like, you know, coming home at 3 a.m. at night, like, you know, from some smoky
club. Same for comedy. I feel the same way. I think. Same thing.
Yeah. No, you know, a nocturnal, you know, people with different circadian rhythms and, you know, different rhythms of life. And but then if you date another, you know, artist, that they're you're
God,
both.
God, no. We space, yeah. Right? I think so, we both tried that. And like, no, especially if they're a comedian. No, no.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And a lot of comedians are. Like, I mean, are very miserable people, right? So it's just like, you know, it's well. I say that because comedy. I respect you guys because comedy is, in my opinion, the most difficult form of art there is out there. Getting people
to funny musicians and writers all say that, and we're all. It's like what Dave Chappelle said is like all, you know, musicians want to be comedians and comedians want to be musicians because they're like, that's cool, and then like that's cool. I just thought that was like.
Well, I don't want to be a comedian because I couldn't, like I said, that level of vulnerability, like I'm, even though I've made myself very vulnerable going on stage and being out there in the public eye or whatever, that level that you guys do is something else. And it's very inspiring. The timing, the technicality of it, it is. So I just want to express my respect for you, but being with someone in that, you know, that's hard. So, you know, as far as how I met my wife, we had mutual friends. I think that's the best thing, you know, when it's like
that's
you
a pass great,
the muster. They, yes. You know, that's a great vector for.
So you didn't have to go on dating apps.
No, that was the other thing. But you know, my wife and I have been together for 10 years now. So, and married for soon to be 7 years.
You
know,
wow.
But before at that time, it was a different sort of culture. It wasn't considered vogue to like even be on a dating app or whatever. So I never had that experience. I never knew what it was like. It was always organic. It was, you know, I asked her out to dinner. We would go out to dinner, go to a show, moved in together. You know, it was that kind of vibe. Fortunately, I've just knocked on wood. I've just been very lucky, you know.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah, to throw that in there.
You gotta throw mashallah.
There we go.
In case it goes wrong.
And just in case for by the time this comes out, we both find out that we're religious Muslims. this measure. Is a conversion, a go back to conversion Muslim.
Conversion. I think though, you know, being with someone who appreciates what you do and, you know, appreciates for me, like, you know, she loves music and she played the clarinet in marching band actually in college. And even though she's in a totally different field as me, we come together on that. And, you know, the other night I was emotional the other night because we have such different schedules and like I had a show in Hyde Park here in Chicago. Like I said, I'm starting this monthly residency. Every last Thursday of the month, I'm going to be playing at the Promontory. And she came to that. And that's the first time she's been able to come to one of my live shows since the beginning of the pandemic. So, you know, and we reconnected on, like, you know, those things that we used to do together. And so anyway, I'm going on a tangent. There's more questions, right?
No, I think you answered that really well. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I guess, finding someone that's maybe, you know, adjacent to your industry, just understands it, is also really helpful. And then finding someone who's like rhythm and just values align. And I think that goes for anything. I think we also forget other professions, like doctors, or who are like always on call. Like, that's always difficult too. Like, our parents all want us, like, me, like, as women, marry doctors if we don't become one, you know, as a plan B. So it's not, it's funny, they don't think about that aspect of it, as like the lifestyle habits and whether they mesh or not. So that's an important thing, regardless of what.
Interestingly enough, she is a doctor. Yeah. So I have a lot of insight into that. And yeah, it's, you know, being with her through residency, that we had to move all across. We lived in 4 different states over the past 5 years. We were in Illinois, then in Wisconsin. She did a intern year in Milwaukee, then 3 years in Baltimore, 2 years of which I was in New York, going back and forth. Then 1 year and sort of a year and a half together in New York, in the Bronx, and then back here in Chicago. So it's, that stuff about, oh, marry a doctor or whatever, you know, it's all in theory, I guess, you know, gravy or whatever, but in practice, that's,
it's difficult. Yeah.
Sacrifice,
yeah. You both have to, sounds like, compromise and sacrifice things. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
marriage, I hear. I don't know. We'll see. So Zeeshan, we have actually one last segment, little game called Keeping Up with the Caucasians.
Wait a minute, I thought there were 50 questions to this date.
No, it's called 50 Shades of Brown. It's a play on our, yeah.
Yeah.
50 Shades.
No, 50 questions? Did you think we're going to ask you?
Oh my God.
You're like, we're going to be here all day.
Oh my God. We don't have time for all that. No.
I usually just do like one or two. So that was perfect.
So these are the categories that you have to choose from. So you pick something and we throw out, an activity or whatever it is, food. You could say it's food, pop culture, activity, style and clothes, and miscellaneous. So pick a category. This is where we talk about things that white people do and whether we as people of color also do these things. So we'll see how white you are. You're going to have to take away your brown card if you answer too many wrong questions. Oh no. Do you have
category? Take a look at me, there's no way I'll ever be white, but
on the inside, maybe.
I will do food, please.
Food. All right. That's a good one. That's a popular one. Okay. So for food, since you grew up kind of in this Americana, how do you feel about meatloaf? Yeah.
The singer? No.
Have you eaten it? Have you cooked it? Have you enjoyed it, more importantly?
I dig meatloaf. I like it. You know, I like it when it has the sauce on top. When
the
it has
ketchup the sauce?
Not the ketchup sauce. There's when it's just like
the
like
gravy.
Beef regular gravy.
Okay. You know? I can.
That sounds really good.
I can deal with that. Yeah. I've never tried the one with that red ketchup-y sauce. It just looks disgusting. I mean,
and even the red ketchup-y sauce is not terrible, but meatloaf, it depends on the sides, you know, to me. It's like you get it's some good like mashed potatoes. I mean, there's some pretty honky ass things like, you know, that I enjoy. So I don't know if I'm gonna do very well at this. So meatloaf is cool. I like meatloaf.
Meatloaf. I'm fasting, so right now I'm just like, meatloaf.
Oh no. I've only had it at school lunches. Meatloaf. I don't like it. Oh my goodness. You're like, I will eat anything. Okay, wait. We'll do one more change of topic. No food. No food. Okay.
Please.
Do you have another category that you want to choose from?
Activities. Could you list them again? Sorry.
Yeah, we got activities, style and clothes, phrases or sayings, and miscellaneous.
How about miscellaneous?
Ooh, all right. Wild card. How do you feel about throwing birthday parties for your dog? For dogs. Have you been to a dog birthday? Do you have a dog? Would you throw them, or pet? Would you throw them a birthday?
I have a cat, and has tried jumping up on the table since you guys.
She's like, put me on the pod.
She just has to be part of. She loves the attention. Would I throw a birthday party? For my cat, I would. I absolutely would. I know that's why it's fun. I would. I love my cat.
I love the honesty.
And because all the crazy cat people, like Sabine, you know, would show up for it.
He would fly there. She would make a special trip from New York to fly to your cat's birthday.
I love dogs. I love dogs too. I just love the animals so much that, you know, especially like when it comes to cats, like when you express your crazy cat dad vibe, like it attracts all the crazies that like love those cats. And then you have such mutual interest. It's like, look at my kitty. He's so cute. Like, you know, you look at your, like my,
I example, love Sabine's cat. Say, it's so, Benicio is my nephew.
He is. He's everyone's
so
nephew.
Cute.
Well, yeah, I can't, I guess it's not showing up.
I wish your cat seen, did but, jump on the table. I wanted to I see her.
Snowy?
That's so cute.
Snowy's about.
Is your cat also white? Is that why it's called Snowy?
She's in a little kitty loaf. You guys want to see her?
Yeah, let's do
going to be for our Patreon listeners. So guys, like, you want some exclusive cat content, please join our Patreon.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me get...
Okay.
She's
so cute.
This is the problem when you
oh my god.
When you talk to a cat person about their cat, all they're gonna want to do is talk.
Okay,
about
that cat is all super I cute. Super, oh my god. I don't have a cat, but I do like them.
I'm just gonna
and now warming up to dogs. Yeah,
I'm just gonna buy you a cat, Athir, and you're. Just
I feel like you're gonna do that one day. It's gonna show up at my door.
I think you should. For the dating thing, I think it helps. I personally think it's attractive. People have pets.
No, my boyfriend hates cats, so I don't think that's going to work.
She's just like a dog. She goes up to people. They come and visit. Every time I have a Zoom call, she jumps up and wants to be like, oh, what's going on? You know, what do you think about it? I call her Abdu Snowy. She has a Muslim name.
Abdu Snowy. Least your cat will be going to heaven. So that's
good. My cat will be going to heaven. Abdu Snowy Bilullah. It means like the cat of God. That's her.
Wow.
So religious.
What a good Muslim. She's fasting. All right.
Yeah.
She's running off. She's angry. I don't know if you passed. I think you're.
I think he's very white.
You're pretty white. I'm going to say it. I'm sorry. Yeah. We should have known the cardigan alone. I think that's on here. Okay. No.
Cardigans. People of color don't wear cardigans.
No,
they never seen Nat King Cole. We've never seen.
They do wear cardigans. I guess,
Sidney Poitier. Come on.
I feel like it was invented by white people though.
By square white people. Yeah. I guess they were.
Brown people and people of color made it cool. That's the difference.
I think what's funny is...
The cardigan was named after James Brudenell, 7th Earl of Cardigan, a British Army Major General who led the charge of the Light Brigade at the Battle of Balaclava during the Crimean War. So there you go, guys. It's this... Balaclava. It's always
on Wikipedia where there's like a little hyperlink there for balaclava, and then
it's really baklava.
It's like
okay.
Oh, that's funny. So funny. That's funny.
Well, now we've all learned something new. Thank you for playing. Thank you for being on the pod. Yeah, where can our listeners follow you? What do you want to plug? Anything coming up?
As if I was. Yeah, it's funny. I was plugging the show the whole damn time.
No, that's good. Rockwood Music Hall. We're gonna be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rockwood Music Hall, May 16th, Rockwood, which it has three stages. So Rockwood 2. Every last Thursday of the month, I'm playing at the Promontory in Hyde Park in Chicago. I'm between both those cities. And so, and I have a new album coming out, hopefully in the fall, fingers crossed.
Built into the language
to give him, you know, it's just like when people compliment you and they say mashallah, and I'm like, I did this.
I want the credit here.
Put it on stage.
God doesn't give a shit about my music career. If he exists, he does not care.
I sang all these notes. I like sang all these falsetto notes. I like tried not to crack. I sweated on stage. I did this. Like, you know, it's like they want to give credit to somebody else. It's like, what is he, a co-writer?
You know, anyway. You got to credit him on your album, I think. You
know? I have to deal with him. He's a friend of ours, right?
He's a friend. And what's your Instagram? Anything like you want to?
Instagram at Zeeshan, Zeeshan, and I suck at socials. Spotify, Zeeshan B, and Twitter, Zeeshan B, Facebook, Zeeshan B. Please give me a follow, validate my existence.
And, same here. Yes. Isn't that why we're all talking into microphones right now?
Get likes or die trying.
It's all exactly. you could like us at No Fly List Pod. Please follow us. Please check out, if you want to see the video of this episode and other episodes, check us out on Patreon. This will also be in the show notes, and you can follow me at Ethir Yacoub.
And you can follow me at Sabine Comedy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. It was so
good. Thanks so much.
See you later.